All right, we're in Innovation Land. How
are you? Hey, Charles. Long time no see.
Definitely, man. This time you're the focus of the interview.
Well, not really. It's really Wes.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you, man?
Good.
It's good to have you on Shoutline again. So you're a dev. You write code.
That's right.
And you work for Eric.
Yep.
So Eric probably gives you a lot of little projects to do.
Well, we're doing fun stuff. So, and this is a really, really fun thing that we've been working on.
What is it?
So we've been working on this. We call it the Live Labs Reactive Framework, or RX. That's the short name.
Okay.
And kind of, the problem we're trying to solve is how to deal with asynchronous programming, event-based programming, and the kind of term for that is reactive programming. I can draw a nice picture about that. So imagine that, this is your program. So this is your C# program or whatever. And then here's the environment. So the environment that's like, the file system and, whatever, the internet, etc.
Okay.
So now there's two ways that this program and the environment can interact. So the first one, which we call interactive programming, is when the program kind of, is in control and asks the environment for stuff. For example, console.readline is a good example. Here the program asks the environment, give me something. Okay? So that's interactive. What's more interesting is reactive here. There you are.
Not bad.
You are reactive.
You're right.
Now it's the environment, kind of, asynchronously sending stuff to the program, and now the program has to kind of, react to that. So that's what we call reactive.
Okay.
And most programming languages and most libraries are very much optimized for the interactive scenario, but not very much for reactive. And one of the most common examples of reactive is event-based programming, where, you write an event handler, somebody clicks on a button, and then your program reacts to that.
Okay.
But it's very hard to write, this in a compositional way, because usually you react to one thing, and then it's over. And then you're kind of, it's hard to maintain state kind of across kind of reactions. Whereas here, if you're doing console.readline, your whole program state is maintained across interactions, but usually not across reactions.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the problem we're trying to solve. Francis, is that fair to
say? That is fair to say. In fact, .NET programmers are pretty familiar with a number of different ways that they deal with reactive programming. So let me just write up just a couple of these.
Okay.
I was thinking about this as off the top of my head as Eric was saying this here. But there's like events, so like you might have like event E in some class. That's a way to get a reactive thing. So this thing, fires an event every time that the owner of the event basically raises the event. There's also functions where you have like void F or some other return type. I guess we could just say R in general. It actually be void.
Yes.
Because we're going to be doing an async thing. And it has some number of arguments, and then it has a callback. So like action of T.
Okay.
And this thing, so when you invoke it, you give it a bunch of parameters, and at some point in the future, when it finishes, it will then call your callback.
Understood. Right?
And so there's a number of different places in the .NET framework that has these kind of callback type of things. Sometimes these are objects that you create, and you do something, and you register a callback. And then at some point in the time, it will do this. There's also other ones like begin, end, invoke.
All very common patterns.
All very common patterns. And this is very similar to this one, although the biggest difference is you can actually cause it to block for the result. But really, it's really the same thing, essentially, as any one of these things. It's a reactive thing that fires back when it's completed. Are there any others you can think of off the top of your head?
No, I think most of them are kind of other ones.
But
yes. And the thing is, like, we have seen, like, there's several Channel 9 episodes about this, right? Jeff Richter has a solution for this when we talked, about
the CCR,
Maestro. It's like, this is a problem a lot of people, F# async workflows are an example. So there's lots of people are kind of, looking into this problem.
Okay. It's a really big problem these days because a number of different reasons. One of the reasons is that distributed computing and async or concurrent programming is becoming much more common. Right, so people are doing things over the web, just like a simple web application has like processing that's going on the client side and on the server. Maybe it's launched off multiple requests to the server in an AJAX situation, and you have to be able to orchestrate all of this. Things are going to fire back at you when they're ready.
Okay.
Right? And that's also the same thing for concurrency as well.
Mm-hmm.
When someone starts up a number of different things, like on different processors, at some point in time they may complete. But getting this stuff to work together with your program here, and there's an environment, so it fires in. And so the funny thing about this is that when you interact, you ask, but you can only really ask one at a time, right? You ask and then you have to wait for the environment to come back.
Okay.
Right? But when it's reactive, what happens is that it fires not when you're ready, but when it's ready, right? Mm-hmm. And so this can actually happen many times at once,
okay.
Right? And essentially. So it's a slightly different thing, requires a lot of thought to be able to do correctly. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But now, so Wes, I think, already kind of showed here something where he said, you know, here you kind of, you know, you ask the environment, here the environment kind of pushes at you. So this is like a pull model where you kind of pull from the environment, and here this is a push model.
Okay.
And this is kind of the trick behind our approach to reactive programming.
All right.
Yeah. So we're going to start writing up the types for push and pull?
Yes.
Let's do that.
Let me just kind of clean the board. Here you go.
All right.
So
Let's do that. So the most common, like the canonical pull type is IEnumerator and IEnumerable. Okay, so let's write those two types. What they look like. So we'll write IEnumerator. I'm gonna skip a few details, but basically you have a move next. Is there a capital A?
Move next. Yeah.
I can't remember.
I never know what is capital K star.
Okay. So anyway, move next, and then there's
T
current.
And then reset, we don't do.
Yeah, we're going to ignore reset. But we will note that this is idisposable.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
And then there's also IEnumerable of T. And this thing has one method, IEnumerator of T. Get enumerator. I'm just going to write get E for now. That's probably good enough. So basically what you can do here is you can, if you have one of these things, so it's something that you can ask. This represents something that you can get something that you can then ask the environment for a series of things.
Okay.
Right? And so what you do is you say get enumerator, and then you get one of those things, and then from here you can call move next. And every time you call move next, it says whether it's done or not. And then if it's not done, you can ask for the current thing.
Exactly.
Right.
But you see here, this is like really a pull model, right? Because
yeah,
you ask
right.
move next, and then you're kind of blocked until that guy says true and then or false, and then you can get the value, and then you say move next again.
That's right.
It's always the kind of, you know, the program that kind of initiates this.
Exactly.
When it's ready, it calls move next, and then it blocks until that.
So you get a big collection back from a query, and this is exactly what typically you're going to do
yes.
to get at the data.
Yes,
yes.
But it's like, but you're kind of pulling the collection kind of one by one. It's like
so it's not just the collection. An IEnumerator and IEnumerable don't just represent a collection.
Sure.
They represent a specific way of getting at a collection.
Yes.
Okay.
Right?
It's
by
like
pulling on it.
Yes.
Enumerating over the data set.
Yes.
So
where the environment it controls when the next thing comes.
Yes.
Got it.
So
the program does.
So one way that I look at this is like the axiom of choice, right? You can ask this collection, you know, or this thing, this abstract thing, give me the next value. And it kind of magically will give you the next value.
Okay.
Okay. So now, since we're now in math land,
good.
One of the things that, you know, we always kind of, you know, felt the intuition was always very close is that we were talking about this is a pull model, and then the other one, the asynchronous, the reactive stuff, is a push model. So that is dual. Okay. So now let's kind of, maybe we should just write it down here, Wes.
Okay.
Let's dualize these interfaces. So what dualizing means, everybody knows what dual means, like the Morgan and stuff like that. So if we dualize the interfaces, so...
I wish we wouldn't have written someone space. Well, right here.
Well, yeah, just write it under
okay.
here. So this guy takes nothing.
So we're going to call it, well, we're just going to call it I for right now, I foo. We'll give it a name later on, maybe. And so what we need to do...
Takes nothing.
So now it's going to return nothing.
Nothing, exactly.
Void, that's nothing. And instead of returning this, it's going to take this.
Or the dual of
that
interface.
So we'll say get bar, and we'll take a... Well, it's not a get, really.
No.
It's a set bar or something. And then we'll have it be an I bar.
Yep.
A T bar. Okay? Mm-hmm. So all we did is just a mechanical translation of taking the return type and putting it as the parameter and the parameter and putting it in the return type.
Uh-huh. This isn't a monad, is it?
It is a monad. And it's a co-monad as well. So
we won't get into co-monads right now.
Not, okay? Not yet.
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah,
sure.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. Okay, right. So then this thing, we're going to make it, it's dual bi bar of t. So instead of having move next, we're going to have something like move next. But instead of returning bool, we return nothing. And let's call it mn for now.
Yep.
And it takes bool. And then there's a current. But if it's dual, all we have to do is just have a set instead of a get.
The exact opposite.
Okay.
Okay. So now this is like complete abstract nonsense, right? I mean, I can see, I get you know, the viewers cannot see it, but Charles here is like, what the heck are these guys doing, right?
Yes, exactly.
But that's the great thing of math. Mm-hmm. We're just doing, you know, we're just applying here the dual, you know, we're making this thing dual, and now we're going to interpret this.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so now we're going to interpret.
So we did our mathematical step, now we're going to interpret what we've actually done.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
So now we've turned back to humans.
Let's turn back to humans.
What's the intuition here? Okay, so let's look at this thing first. Yes. This is easier to look at first.
Okay.
Wait a second. We forgot also one thing that we should add here. Okay. Is that current, when you kind of, you know, ask for it, it can kind of, you know, throw an exception, right?
Yes.
So we should kind of, you know, just have here, because the exception is like a return type here, we should have like, you know, an exception thing that takes as an argument here, right? So that's like void.
Yeah.
I don't know what we call it, like, you know, let's call it XXX, which takes an exception. Which is, again, is the dual of the current that throws an exception. We now have to something that takes an exception as the argument.
What are you saying here? This is actually easier to see if you get rid of the property.
Yes.
So, like, let's just do that for a second. So if you were to get rid of this property, it would be like...
You want to...
Yeah, so let's just get rid of this thing. So instead of having this, we will say T
current.
Get current.
Yes.
Right? This is essentially the exact same thing.
Okay.
Right? Now, what he was saying is that this really is like, you know, in Java you'd maybe write throws, you know, exception or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is really part of the return type. You could think of it as being, you know, T or an exception coming out here.
And so if you look at the kind of, you know, the interface in Java where they have a similar interface, it actually has here throws exception.
Okay.
That's right. So what we could do over here is instead of having this, I'm going to erase this for a second,
yes,
too, and we could have a void, again, just taking
this
parameter.
Let's take red for the jewel.
Yeah. Here. You can hold this one.
That gets to be really weird.
This parameter goes through a return type,
okay.
Void. We'll call it set current. And really, it should take T or exception as the thing that comes in. Okay.
All right.
Now we're gonna try to interpret this thing, and then we'll clean it up as we interpret it.
All right.
To make it more sense.
Why don't we now wipe out the black stuff and then write in blue the kind of, you know, interpret
it over here because I want to keep come back.
Okay.
To this
oh yes.
Later
yes.
On.
Yes. Okay.
Sure. Okay, this is great. This is real-time whiteboarding.
So,
exactly.
So we have this I bar thing. Let's start interpreting it. So what is this MN? Before it meant move next, we'd ask the environment to get if there's another thing available and to move to that thing and return back whether there is or not. So now, instead, the environment's going to fire at us whether there is a next thing. Okay.
Okay.
And it's going to say true if there is and false if there isn't. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
Absolutely.
That's right, isn't it?
Exactly.
The interpretation.
Uh-huh.
So now the environment will fire at us calling this MN thing. And so really, we don't. But if we have MN of true, it's kind of not, it's like, that's really like a no-op, really. It's saying there's more stuff, right? But we don't really care.
Hmm.
Because later on it's going to tell us what that stuff is.
And also, if you look at this guy, once this returns false, you know, you're not supposed to call it. So it's kind of, you know, we're kind of dualizing that here and saying, you know, if this thing, you know, called with true, you don't need to call it. Because, you know, but if you call it with false, sorry, if you call it with true, it means you're not doing anything. If you're calling it with false, it's like a no-op, right? Okay. So this means done.
Yes.
So you call it only once, but then you don't have to pass the flag.
So we're going to rename this thing now, and we're not going to pass the flag because by default, if you invoke it, it's like saying mn of true of false. Excuse me. So we're going to call it break. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Now we get to what set current is. Now set current takes a T or an exception, but for anything like this, what we can always do is break it out into like two methods. One that takes the T and one that takes the exception. So we're going to call one of them, the one that takes the T, yield. And it takes the T.
Okay.
Okay. And then we have the one that takes the exception, we'll call throw an exception. Now this should actually look pretty familiar. So if you're writing an iterator in your code,
yep.
There's three different things you can do in order to get values or to do the meta control of the iterator. You can yield values out, you can throw an exception, or you can break out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what this thing is saying. It's saying, the environment can tell you there's a new thing available, there's an exception that happened, or you're done.
Got it.
Right? Nothing else will come. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to call this thing an observer of T. Okay? So if you have an observer, then the environment can notify you about this collection that's there. But instead of pulling on it, you now get pushed the values or the meta control, whether it's done or there's an exception.
Interesting.
Makes sense?
Yes.
But now you see that we magically arrived at this just by doing symbol pushing and mm-hmm. then interpreting.
Okay.
And so it's like, I think that's kind of, for me, wonderful. I don't know. That's the beauty, and it also shows that we have kind of discovered something really deep here because of this duality, which means that all kind of properties that hold for enumerables mm-hmm. now also hold for observables.
Okay.
Because that's what you get from the math. And in particular, what we will see is that we can implement link over enumerable, that's like link to objects, mm-hmm. and so we can also implement link over observables.
But now we didn't really, not that we should go down this rabbit hole, per se.
Yeah.
But we didn't really talk about the math at this point. You just said dual.
Okay.
There's a little bit more than that.
So what
some ugly symbols going on. You more than anyone else know what I'm talking about.
Well, but if you go to Wikipedia and you search for duality in category theory, you will find exactly this.
Excellent.
Okay, so if you have an arrow from A to B, mm-hmm. the dual is an arrow from B to A. So that's kind of what we were doing here. So like we're changing the return type and the argument
type. Yeah.
This is not taking the inverse, right? This is mm-hmm. just taking the dual.
Excellent.
Plus programmers, and maybe we should say a little bit more about the dual. Programmers know a lot about duality too. Like, and or are dual. So, if I have, A and B and I had A or B. Mm-hmm. Okay, so since AND and OR are dual, we get that when you kind of negate this, this is like, not A AND, OR not B.
Yep. Okay. And precise and, not that.
Yep. And because it's dual, we know that not, okay, I should do it like this, that not A or B is not A AND not B. So
yes.
the thing, the duality is like, get one, buy one free. And since I'm Dutch, I love that, right? It's like, you have one thing and you get the other one for free from the duality. That's the power of duality.
Excellent.
It's a very cheap way to generate theorems or implementations.
So let's continue to get some theorems for free.
We're also not yet done, we still have to have the
observable. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue doing this rote translation now, interpreting it, in order to get some more useful information. So down here, we had this ifoo. So we've already interpreted what bar was. Bar is our iObserver. So what is ifoo? Well, we know that the return type of this set bar has to be void, and it takes in an iObserver of t as its argument. And what we're going to do is call this attach. And we'll call this observable.
And again, it's a dual, right? Here you say get enumerator, and there you attach an observer. So it's also kind of the dual operationally. The feel is completely dual.
So you tell the environment, here's my observer. Mm-hmm. Now the environment can then notify you through the observer whenever when he has something available.
And so the observer reacts to the inputs from the environment, and that's why it's called
reactive. So it's a proxy from the environment to you. essentially. Right?
Well, maybe the way I would say it is something you give to the environment, and that will kind of, yes.
So before,
communicate.
Yes. So before with the enumerate, with the numerators, enumerables, you ask the environment, for a numerator.
Yes.
And then you would ask for the enumerator for each value.
Yes. Cool.
Now you, instead of asking, you tell the environment, here's the thing I want to notify through, and then instead of getting it from it, he gives to you each value.
Yes. Interesting.
So it's exactly the opposite.
So that was like when I threw the pen at you.
Yes.
You hadn't registered your observer.
However, exactly, I had registered my, so that was a totally sort of like, a blind reactive event.
Exactly.
I mean, I had no idea it was coming.
Yeah, exactly.
But you'd hope that the programmer would have some idea of what he expects to get from the environment.
Yes.
I mean, that's fair.
Absolutely.
And that's wrapped up in an observer.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
Okay.
So now we've covered this at a pretty high level, but what we want to do is we haven't talked about one thing, important thing, which is this enumerator was disposable before.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice this actually looks pretty close to what .NET events, or not just .NET events, just any events. If you look at like HTML events or .NET events or anything like that, they usually have like an attach, and then you give in something like an action or a delegate in .NET world. Same thing in other places. But they usually have a detach. Okay, they usually have something like void detach, and you give the same iObserver of t, right? And then detach it. This is what usually it looks like.
So people that kind of may remember old COM days, there you also had the kind of same protocol where you kind of would attach an observer and you would detach it. Or with events where you write button dot click plus equals, a delegate, and then you write button.click minus equals delegate. So that's kind of this pattern. So you attach and you detach.
Okay. Yes.
And this is actually a terrible thing.
Yes.
Because it's not compositional. When you start putting these things together, which we will in a second here, if you do that and you have this attach and detach, each level of composition needs to remember which thing maps to which so that when you do it, it can undo it. Right, and so that has to be kept track of, and you have space leaks, and you have bloat, and so on. It's bad, bad, bad,
yes.
bad, bad.
Plus the other things, even here, like people will notice this. If D here's an anonymous method, and you write the same anonymous method, it won't remove it because the anonymous methods they look the same, but they don't have the same identity. So you have to write var f equals anonymous method, and then you have to do f here.
Yes.
But now type inference doesn't work. So
but this is exactly the same thing that happens. Why it's, I say it's not compositional because each level of composition has to remember this f.
Yes.
In order to do the detach.
Okay.
Yep, right.
So this is bad.
It's bad.
Okay.
So we still have to have a detach, right? So instead what we're going to do is we're actually going to have the attach return back something that represents the attachment, okay? So you can think of this as being like the attachment. So when you attach, you get back the attachment. But really the only thing we want to do with this attachment is have a reference to it and be able to dispose it, okay? And that's actually very analogous to here where we had this enumerator that we could dispose. We want to be able to dispose the attachment you made to the observable. So what you do, instead of returning an attachment, it would return back an iDisposable. It still represents the attachment. But now what you can do at some point in the future, if you don't want this thing to be attached anymore, you just dispose the attachment.
Great.
Another way to look at it is that here, if you look at enumerator, it is two things, right? It's this interface that has move next and current, and it has the disposable part.
Mm-hmm.
So when we dualized, we only dualized the kind of enumerator part. But so when we kind of, switched around the signature for get enumerator, we kind of moved the enumerator here to the argument to
begin the
observer, but we split the interface. We kind of left the disposable behind.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's kind of what we did.
Move the enumerator part here.
Because this is really two interfaces, right? It's enumerator and disposable. So we moved only the enumerator part here, and we left the disposable part there.
Okay.
And that's exactly what you see here.
Yep.
All right.
So there we go. This is what we have. Now let's see what kind of fun and games we can do with since we have this thing.
Okay.
So we kind of talked about why this is useful. In general, it's useful for anything you do with .NET events today, but also with asynchronous programming too. Like, that's all the rage these days with things like, the concurrency, the multi-core, and the distributed programming that's going on.
Yes.
We want to be able to do neat stuff. So let's do some of that.
Okay.
But first of all, in order to do that, what we want to do is talk about what combinators are a little bit real quick.
That would be good.
And as well as like the fact that we mentioned that it was a monad. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a monad. Yeah, go ahead. That can all go. All we need is this, I guess.
Eric, you guys only make monads, so I should throw that out there.
Well,
yeah. Volta is a monad, man.
Well, but the thing is, like, anything that's interesting computationally is a monad. So, because that's kind of where you know, it's like, that shows the essence of the computation. And yes. So whenever there's an interesting computation going on, it kind of, you know, just shows itself as a monad.
That's right. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It basically means that this thing becomes really compositional and easy to work with as you yes. use it, right?
All
right.
So combinators.
So combinators, really, a brief thing of like what a combinator is. It's just like a function or a method you'd use, but it takes things and then combines them together to make new things. That's the most basic. So in our case, what we're going to do is we're going to write methods that take observables and maybe one or more with some
and
other
make
stuff.
New observables.
Make new ones.
Okay.
That's it. And so you're familiar with this with link. It's not like a new idea. With link, you've been doing like select many, where, and you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And those basically, like for where, for example, which is a filter, takes in the link to objects case, takes an enumerable predicate and produces a new enumerable. So in that case, it's a combinator, because it takes one and then something else and it combines it to produce another one.
Okay.
So we do the same thing here. So so for example, does where or select make sense with observables? Well, absolutely. So for example, if you have an observable that's an observable of t, and now what you want to be able to do is maybe change it to one that's of u. So for example, what we might be able to want to do is, so suppose that o is an observable, we might want to be able to do something like this. Select of x plus 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what this basically means is, so if the environment notifies me that x is, say, 3, then if I attach to this guy, if I attach to O, I'd have something else, and maybe this is O1. So if I attach to both of them, so suppose that O notifies with, or yields the value 3. So this guy would see 3 come out, but this guy would see 4, right? Because what would happen is it would go through O, which would be 3, but then he takes the X and adds 1 to it and gets 4.
Sure.
Right? That's what you'd expect.
Yep. So it's really just kind of taking all the kind of values that are yielded into the observer for this guy that you attach and just kind of, you know, applying that function to that thing.
Yes.
And that is very similar to enumerable. Because what you do with enumerable is whenever you ask for a value, well, you kind of, you know, you intercept that and you kind of, you know, add one to it. And here it's the same. Whenever, you know, a value gets pushed at you, you intercept it, you add one, and then you kind of push it through to the new observer.
So if we have something like this, you can imagine that, let's like write up like a query you might want to do. So, for example, what's a good example often? So from x in...
Maybe let's take the input events from a text field.
Okay, so text field, so your text box
dot, yeah.
dot text changed.
Yep.
So what this does is every time the text changes, it binds x to that value and goes here. It goes to the next line.
And then there I select, you know, x dot to upper or something.
Yep, select x... upper.
Now we already used link syntax.
Yes. Oh, I just did it. So
that's great.
So basically, what happens is this is the same as saying. I mean, I've talked about this before, but this is the same thing as saying text box, dot text changed, dot select of x goes to x dot to upper. Making one assumption that this thing has type iObservable of
string.
Of string. Okay. So the idea is that now whenever the text changes, every time it changes, it's going to fire through here, just like we had in the previous example, but it's going to do a transforming the string that the user had typed currently mm-hmm. into the uppercase version of it.
Okay.
So anybody that attaches to this will only get the uppercase thing. So that's kind of cute, but that, you know, that's... So, for example, if you could do that with your .NET events, that'd be pretty interesting, right?
Yes, it would.
Because a lot of times people will have these events on, like, you know, sub-controls, and they want to provide these other meta-events that are on top of the events, and maybe they're contained controls that contain them, right? Mm-hmm. And those controls they maybe, when the, like a validation, for example, form validation, when the user has typed this, and he's clicked these radio buttons in this pattern, mm-hmm. and done this these other steps, then we want to say the form is valid. And then maybe there's a form valid event. And so what we can do is we can do sort of filtering and projections that do form validation just as queries, hmm. right, based on what the user has done.
Sure.
And so just to show you some history, we okay. should be kind of, you know, and give credit where credit is due. Where are we? So here, so if you look at F sharp, you know, Don Simon's kind of a long time ago. I don't know if this is visible.
It is, absolutely.
So he's like, you know, used the first class events in F sharp. It already says here, you know, first class events in reactive programming. But there's a kind of couple of differences between what we're doing and this. So the idea again of reactive programming is very popular and common in the functional programming community.
Mm-hmm.
The main difference that what we have done is that we kind of, you know, have this observable interface that's the exact jewel of the enumerable interface, whereas the first class events here are not, you know, they're not kind of related to enumerables in this way.
And they also don't really make any commitment about what yes. how they actually work underneath.
Yeah.
They're just the interface.
Observables.
Observables.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes. Which we should probably talk about the implementation now, which is also a big difference about, like, you know, how the implementation
yes.
works. Should we?
Yes, we should talk
yes,
about
yeah.
it. So I wanted to. So should we do another example first, a more complete
sure.
example,
yes.
or should we go to the implementation first? You think?
Let's do one more example
oh,
so
yes.
that we can be sure that everybody
yeah.
still
yes,
follows.
Let's do
along
that.
Let's do where.
Let's do, okay, so let's do where, and can we do a, like a little, combine this with like an asynchronous thing? So
oh, yeah, okay, yes.
Let's
yes.
take the same thing here. So now this is still, whenever the text changes, we get it into X.
Now let's do our HX example.
Maybe we should do dictionary suggest or
yes,
something.
Yes.
Is that okay? So what we'll do now is we'll say from Y in maybe server.getSuggestions
X
of X. Okay? And then, so this thing has type iObservable of string. So you can observe a sequence of strings, a collection of string. This thing is a function on the server, basically, that goes from
string to
string
iObservable of array of string.
To iObservable of string array. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what this type is. So what we're saying now is, whenever the text changes, please ask the server for the suggestions for whatever the user happened to type in now. And when that becomes available, when that asynchronous call finishes, then we bind that to Y, and maybe we say where Y dot starts with...
Well, Y is an array, so maybe we
oh,
say
yes.
when a Y dot length or count
yes,
is
right.
not equal, is greater well,
y
than
dot
zero.
Length.
Right, because maybe there's a word that's not in the dictionary, so we don't want to have that.
Select Y. Right?
Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
So now this thing will fire whenever there's an array that's non-empty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Based on the dictionary suggestions and the text changing.
Mm.
Now there's one little interesting point here. Should we talk about that? About with the until stuff?
Let's do that later.
Okay.
Let's
so we'll come back to this.
Yes.
So this is a good example about the kind of thing you might want to use. But the key point here is with this example is that you can combine things together in like this in this very easy way, but also they don't have to be just events. They can also be this asynchronous computation here or events that are going on. We do both. And so that's the beauty of observables, right?
Sure.
So an asynchronous computation really is just a singleton collection, right?
Yeah. But so I think there's two kind of subtle things here that we should talk about. So one is like what happens when you're kind of, you know, when you're composing these things, and
yes.
we should kind of write here, you know, the thing here is like, you know, var q equals this.
Yes.
So now does this thing do something, right?
Yes,
because we write
question.
Here some query, but the, you know, which says text change. Now if I kind of, you know, type on the keyboard, will this thing react?
So let's,
or not.
So let's say you did this. Let's say you
yes.
wrote this code, and then you expected stuff to happen, right? And so I'm the computer, I'm running it, and nothing happens. And you're like, what the heck? Well, you know, why doesn't it do
yes,
anything?
So, what, yeah, so what you have to do is you have to kind of attach an observer to this.
Before we get there, let's do it with the same thing as
the environment is unaware.
Yes.
So this is enumerable. If this was an enumerable, nothing would have happened either. Right? Nothing would have happened if this was an enumerable query. What you have to do in order for something to happen is say, for each, you know, var x in q, right? And then some stuff, right? This actually, when you actually start enumerating over the thing, it would actually cause the stuff to happen, right? Before, the query just represents something that will happen in the future once you want to evaluate it, right? It's actually very much the same between this statement, too. So if you have var f is equal to some lambda expression, you can't write quite this code, but suppose you could. There's the definition of a lambda, and then...
That doesn't do anything.
Doesn't do anything.
Right, maybe there's like console.writeline. That's maybe a better example.
Yeah, that's even a better one. So let's do console.writeline x. Okay? Mm-hmm. So this doesn't write anything yet. All it is something that when in the future, and for each time in the future I do it, it will happen.
Absolutely.
So this is all about side effects, right? So it's when do side effects happen? So there's one side effect here that kind of creates the delegate here, right? Because that's a side effect because there's something allocated in the heap and so on. And then there's another side effect when you call the delegate, when you invoke
it. And for each time you call it.
And for each time. So the side effects are repeated.
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing I should notice when Wes wrote down the for each, what's really going on, the for each calls get enumerator. Right?
Yes.
And so the first thing for each does is say get enumerator, and then it calls move next inside a while loop.
Yes.
So that's kind of a phasing where you kind of, you know, call, you know, get enumerator.
And there's actually four distinct phases there, right? There's the construction part of the query, and then the for each case, there's construction of the query, which happens above whenever the for each happens. There's the get enumerator. There's the move next part, and at the end there's the disposing part.
Yes.
There's four different phases.
And so the same is basically here. So when you write this query here, just like an enumerable, nothing happens. This just builds something of type iObservable.
Okay.
But no side effects have happened, except for the side effects maybe in the implementation of select, but not the side effects in here.
But those are the constructing side
yes.
effects, the construction of the query.
Yes, but nothing, these side effects in here never happen. Because nothing, the query is not running, right? I'm not observing the thing yet.
Yes. Understood. You're just describing the computation. So now here, later on, you say, Q attach some observer thing, right? And this is like saying get enumerator, the analogous to that.
Yes. And for example, in this case, what we would put here, something that would take the array and print it on the screen. So whenever you type something, it would kind of show the thing on the screen.
Yeah, so actually, you can actually write just this code. You could say, take x, and then maybe like write, you know, or take the x's and write the x's.
Yes.
Right, that kind of thing. So this is phase one when you describe the query. Phase two is when you attach it. Phase three is maybe when the user actually, user types something. So the environment causes some value to occur in this push collection.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing as having move next. You call it move next, but now instead
but
of you doing it,
the
environment's doing it.
Yes.
That's phase three. And then at some point in the future, you could have said, you know, var d equals is attached, and you could have said d.dispose.
And now we're unhooking the handler.
And that's the four. That's the exact same type of phasing as the enumerables.
And so the nice thing about this is that you can just read these queries and just think that they're like enumerables, because they are. You can just think it's like, you know, the event stream here as some enumerable stream is just like a collection. And then this guy, you know, an asynchronous computation is like an enumerable collection that has one element.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, instead of like, you know, asking for that one element, the collection will tell you when that element is available. And then so it's kind of a very natural a way to look at this. If you understand enumerables, you understand observables. And so in that sense, we believe that, you know, we've made this event-based and asynchronous programming kind of really familiar because, you know, I mean, you cannot do any programming in .NET without doing enumerables. So, you know, that knowledge now just kind of, you know, smoothly transitions to dealing with events and asynchronous
And all of your existing asynchronous stuff, like .NET events, begin and invoke, etc., can be converted to observables.
Yes.
They're basically, anything that is a push thing from the environment can be converted to an observable. Actually, even pool things can be converted to observables, yes, too, but that's another story.
And then the other thing is that what is very nice here is that in many cases you have a pattern like this, where there's some event stream, where that's kind of more than one, right? Because this text box fires every time, you know, it changes, that you then combine with an asynchronous computation that returns kind of one result. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so,
at most one result.
At most one result, because it can get zero results or it can fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's like, you know, there's an interesting problem here with multiple results that we should talk about. But then first, I think we should explain, you know, how the kind of phasing works and how the attachment works. Yeah, how we're kind of making sure that...
Let's actually implement select.
Yes.
It's one of the simpler ones, and we can just do that right here.
Cool.
Because that's kind of, you know, extremely important that we have this phasing right, that when you do select, that kind of nothing happens. No side effects are happening.
All right, so we have select here. And so select returns back an iObservable of U. And we're going to make it extension method, iObservable.
Maybe we should use IO or something. That's.
I was just trying to keep it separate from observer.
Okay.
Because we're actually going to do the different things here. We'll call this O, and then we'll have a func from T to U F. So anybody that's looked at select, they know that this is pretty much the exact signature. In fact, if you look at the C# spec or the VB spec, they actually specify that select should have something of this form, where basically it should have, you know, M of T here and M of U here. And, of course, this is essentially the same thing.
Yeah. And, of course, if you were in Haskell, you could kind of express that, but you can't really express it here.
So, there we go. That's our thing. Now, the funny thing is, let's do, like, functional programming 101 here and see if we can implement this select. Basically, just by doing...
Without thinking.
Just by doing...
Okay, no thinking. Go.
Well, all we can do is just follow the types. We're not going to interpret it. That's what we're not going to
do. Exactly. So we're doing the same thing in some sense. This is a trick that's kind of, you know... We used in my team, and we are all using this to kind of, you know, great success, where we're just kind of let the math guide us, right? We're thinking, but in a different way, right? I don't want to say we're kind of programming without thinking, but it's kind of, you know, amazing that how we derived that observable interface, or subject observer as it's known in design patterns, just by doing symbol pushing. And now Wes is going to show you how to implement select without thinking, just by symbol pushing.
Without interpretation.
Interpretation, that's maybe better than without thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. We are thinking a lot.
Yes.
But it's what we're doing is we're following the trail of the math, right?
Exactly.
And
we let the math guide us instead of, you know, our intuition or operational concerns.
That's the one that we usually do. Most programmers think very operationally about, what do I do now? How is the state of the machine affected? What do I do next? And so on. Instead, we're just going to follow it just based on how it flows from the math. And then we're going to interpret it afterwards.